Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guest on today's podcast is my friend Erica Munson. Welcome, Erica.
Glad to be here.
Will you just, if some of our listeners may not know you, will you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. So I'm a lifelong Mormon. My Mormon heritage goes way back to the beginning in some of the first pioneer companies that came out to Utah. I've grown up in the church. I lived in Salt Lake as a very young child, but then my family moved east and I grew up in Boston. And I had the really important experience of being often the only LDS person at my school or in my space, learning to get comfortable with that, and also just receiving so much nourishment and enrichment from my LDS ward and my young women and advisors. And so being comfortable in those two worlds, and sometimes they intersected and sometimes they didn't, but they both had a really powerful impact on me. So, I'm a mother of five kids and three grandkids.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I just love being a grandma. And I also love, I was a stay-at-home mom for 25 years. I have a degree in art history, and I met my husband in college. But actually, in some ways, contrary to a lot of my classmates, I just felt like doing the Mormon thing big time. And so I was home with kids for 25 years, very happy doing that. My youngest was in about the fourth or fifth grade, and we had also moved. We've lived outside of Utah. My husband and I have raised our kids outside of Utah for most of our lives, living in the Northeast. We lived in Germany for 6 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was wonderful. And so beyond my childhood, I was also what we used to refer to as out in the mission field. I don't think that's the case anymore, and we're learning that the mission field is right here when it involves our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. But in 2009, my husband and I moved the kids that were still at home to Utah for various reasons, and that really stuck with me. And Richard, stop me at any point if you have any questions or
okay,
whatever.
You're doing
I'm just gonna kind of tell the story. And so we moved to Utah, and I experienced, even though Utah was where grandma and grandpa lived, Utah was vacation land, Utah was the ancestral homeland. I hadn't really lived here. And so I immediately became aware of that Mormon, non-Mormon thing that exists. And had a feeling within my ward we were welcomed in our ward, and our ward is full of wonderful people, but there was sort of this sense of us and them, that, you know, the world is a dangerous place, and this is where we come together to reinforce who we are, and we want to be careful about who's out there. And one of the groups that we want to be careful about, or that even we are downright afraid of and threatened by, are LGBTQ people. And so there wasn't a sense that our gay and trans brothers and sisters are part of us. It was very much an othering. And I just felt like, is there anything I could do to try to soften this conflict? Is there something I could do? And I love the idea of juxtaposition. I love the idea of challenging conventional wisdom. And so I thought, well, where do Mormons not really hang out? Pride parades, pride festivals. You see ex-Mormons in pride festivals. You see post-Mormons in pride festivals. You see plenty of people who've never been associated with the church. But is there a way that I could march in a pride parade because of what my religion preaches, not in spite of it, that I could stand up for the principles that Jesus taught, and show up as an active Mormon. Could this work? Is there any way I could do this? And I just felt really strongly like, okay, well, I'm just going to do it. And so this was 2012, and in January of 2012, I just booked a spot in the Utah Pride Parade.
Wow.
And didn't think about it much after that. And then suddenly it's May, and they're saying, okay, so, you know, give us the plans for your group or whatever. And I just, started sending out some emails to friends and said, would you like to march with me as an active Mormon, you know, as a committed Mormon to in this Pride Parade? And long story short, I hoped the 25 people would come, and over 300 people came that day.
300 people came.
Yeah, and it was a really interesting moment.
Was it a Sunday? Did they have?
Yes, it was on a Sunday, and so that's a big part of the question of how do you do this, and can you claim to be practicing your religion if you're participating in this kind of event on the Sabbath? And we had sort of two ways of responding to that. First of all, the Savior went to where people were. And we felt like we could do that without judgment. And we could say, we are here for you. And I was actually initially really concerned about entering that space and I talked to the organizers at the Pride Center, were just wonderful, because I initially said, listen, I get that Utah Pride Parade was kind of created to get away from all those Mormons in a lot of ways. And are you okay with us even being there? And they said, absolutely, we are so glad you're here. And on the day, we were thinking, you know, there might be people in the crowd unhappy to see us. I wonder if we're going to get bottles thrown on us and, you know, stuff. Turned out completely the opposite. So go to where people are. And second, we made the space we were in sacred, in that we treated it as a Sunday worship. We wore our church clothes. Our signs were only scriptures, quotations from hymns, and quotations from LDS general authorities.
That's a wonderful idea. I don't know where you came up with that idea.
We had an opening prayer and an opening hymn before we left, as we're waiting to line up, and we continue to do that. We now have a devotional, really. We have a devotional before we set off. We made it a sacred space, and to our, you know, it was deeply, deeply moving to see the reaction of the crowd, and that people coming up and hugging us and crying. And this is what I had not realized in my comfort in being a, you know, white heterosexual woman who from the outside fits very well into the church model, okay? I had assumed when I saw my gay friends, I really had for many, many years before that, I put the issue of the church and homosexuality really on the shelf. I felt like I don't see how this can be resolved. But I don't want to leave the church over it. And so I'm just going to put it over here. And when my gay friends would feel like they needed to leave the church, I totally felt like, I understand, you know, God be with you. But I assumed that after that one difficult decision, that it would be all over for them. They'd be fine and everything would be good. And what I learned that first Pride Parade was people coming up to us and saying, when I had to choose between my identity and my religion, I had to choose my identity because for reasons of health and wholeness, but it left a hole in my heart. Leaving that religion left a hole in my heart. And thank you for reaching out. And so it was clearly not, I had just planned this as a one-time thing. And it clearly, there was a need out there. It was just an interesting time because there are a lot of other people thinking about this. And maybe it was because we were far enough away from the heartache of that Prop 8 created, that both the LGBTQ non-Mormon community was kind of ready to engage again in the conversation. And I think there were Mormons out there who felt really bad about Prop 8, who'd been good soldiers and had done what their church leaders asked them to do on it, but felt bad and felt like, well, I don't hate gay people. What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to talk about this? It was so funny. The day before the first march in our neighborhood, my youngest daughter was in seventh grade, I think, and she was hanging out with some neighborhood kids, and she was saying, and they were Mormon, and she was saying, yeah, my mom and I are going to march in the Pride Parade tomorrow. Wow. And one of the kids said, oh, I thought we hated gay people. I don't hate gay people, but I thought we did. And so that just sort of is an example of the kind of assumptions that have been, you know, with us for so long. And so it just became clear that there was a lot of work to do here, and the idea of engaging in the conflict and mitigating the difficulty. We did not see ourselves as, and we do not see ourselves as changing church doctrine, but we are bridge builders who want to figure out ways for this, for our beloved church, which has a doctrine that is, you know, pretty almost literally and certainly eternally an existential threat to gay and trans people. How do you keep talking about it? How do you show the love that Jesus taught? How do you build bridges? How do you build bridges both within your ward, within to the institutional church, to the LGBT community around you? How do you do this in a healthy and life-giving way?
That's I love what the story you shared of that, of just how do you step in the space and you decide to go meet LGBTQ people where they were. And using the doctrine of Christ. I remember when I stepped in this space, Erica, you were someone that I've quickly found on social media and read what you had done. I thought, this is a great example for me of someone who's stepping the space but not asking our doctrine or policies to change, which I'm sure some people pull you and want you to sort of be an advocate for doctrinal change, but you've said these are my boundaries and this is where our organization and I'm going to personally serve. Talk about Mormons Building Bridges. Just introduce that organization to our listeners. And I'm not sure if you have chapters in multiple cities. I know there's Mormons Building Bridges events all over the country now.
Right, yeah. So we are a very grassroots nonprofit. We have a fiscal sponsor, and that's how we work sort of legally and financially. Don't have at this point right now, so we're all run by volunteers. At this point, we don't have chapters per se, nationwide, or worldwide, but we do have what happens is that if anybody who wants to march in a pride parade or be a presence in their local pride festival, as Mormons Building Bridges, can do so, as long as they understand we, you know, talk with you and discuss the guidelines and how we operate. And so we've had Mormons Building Bridges marching groups all over the country and even in Canada. and will and for everybody out there, wherever you are, if you're interested, you can go to our website. So another thing we do...
Tell our listeners what your website
sure.
is, and we'll put it in
MormonsBuildingBridges.org.
Okay.
And another thing you can do is at a Pride Festival is have a Mormons Building Bridges hugging booth. And this is a really meaningful thing. It's a place where we give out free hugs, and you'll get and when you get a hug, you get a sticker that says "Hugged by a Mormon." And let me tell you, it's really fun. Talk about juxtaposition. I remember being at the LA Pride Festival and giving big hugs to buff gentlemen in different kinds of clothing that I'm not used to, and putting a little sticker on their shoulder. And it became a very cool thing at the festival to have one of these stickers. So, but more, way more important than that are the conversations that happen at these hugging booths. And you are able to just be with people and talk to them about their identity, about the struggles a loved one has had. And it's just a beautiful time for listening. It's not always easy, but it's a great thing. And it's also a good thing if you are not comfortable with marching on a Sunday. Hugging booths can happen on Saturdays too. And so that's another thing. So those are the sort of most visible things we do. But
how did the idea of a hugging booth? Do you remember that?
Let's see. We were working with... I think we were working with affirmation. I'm gonna shout out to Jameson Manwaring, because he was a part of this in the first, the second year we did the Utah Pride Parade, and so we just thought about this hugging booth, and it's a lot of fun, and the idea is to give hugs, in a loving way, not stand there and ask for hugs. Because there are plenty of reasons for folks at a Pride Festival not to want to hug a Mormon. But anyway, we are offering hugs. So anyway, so we also, our Facebook group is now like 7,000 people. We have retreats, quarterly retreats, which at this point we are holding in Utah, but we're always interested. We would love to go other places if we got funding for that, and if there was interest. And these quarterly retreats are contemplative retreats designed to help participants manage the conflict that exists between LDS doctrine and LGBTQ identity. And they are 24 hours. They're free. And we feed you, and we give you, and it's a series of group conversations and individual contemplation and journaling, where we have an opportunity to really wrestle with these issues in a way that is respectful to everybody. We have some really strict ground rules about speaking from your own experience. There's no expected outcome. This is not a therapeutic retreat in any way. We're not trying to get anybody to get to a certain point. It's just an opportunity to, in a peaceful, contemplative setting, listen to the spirit, listen to your inner wisdom. And they're beautiful experiences. And we have, and each of the four have different emphasis, bridge building, resilience, how to deal with anger, and frustration, abiding frustration. So those are really wonderful, important experiences, and I encourage everyone who's listening or interested, you can read more about them on our website.
When's your next retreat?
Next one will be in... January.
January.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So our mission statement is to make LDS homes, congregations, and communities safe and welcoming for LGBTQ people, and to support those people on their life's path. So In the public sphere, when there is something that we think is important to make our community safer for LGBTQ people, we get behind that. So the Utah non-discrimination bill will last Utah legislative session. We were involved with the proposed bill to let transgender people get the marker on their identification change before, even while they're minors. Right now that can't happen, and that's extremely difficult for a lot of people. And then suicide prevention. We've been at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention events, lobbied our legislatures, our legislature in Utah for funding, and I think we've seen some good progress in that. What needs to happen is some really good research, I think. So we're, you know, we're, like I said, we're very grassroots, we're very volunteer oriented, but we're doing things that I think matter.
And I agree. Tell us what you're doing professionally. This, you've also have a career going
on. Oh, me, Erica Munson. Yeah. So anyway, so I was, like I said, I have an art history degree. I was home with children for 25 years. And then when I moved to Utah, I started a teaching career. And I teach high school at the Waterford School in Sandy. I'm an English teacher and a librarian. And one thing I love is when my professional life, my volunteer nonprofit life, my church life, my family life intersect, and they all do.
That's beautiful.
And so teaching at a high school in Utah, there have been opportunities to have really lovely conversations with gay Mormon kids and with non-Mormon gay and trans kids, just to maybe help them understand the Mormon community that they find themselves in. And using also, you know, as an English teacher, using the great literature to understand the human experience and understand how we connect to each other and we connect to God. That's a beautiful part of my professional life that bleeds into everything else too.
I love that. That is really beautiful. All these service areas that you do are not sort of islands to themselves, but all connects in a beautiful way.
Right. Yeah. It's very fulfilling.
One of the things I know you get a lot of messages, and I get the same kind of messages, are from active LDS people wanting to connect in the space. Mm-hmm. They recognize there's a gap and a need. I sometimes call it a gap between our restored church that I sustain and support and its ability to fully minister to its LGBTQ members. And some members may see that gap and not feel impressed to sort of step in. And that's fine. But some members say, yeah, I want to do something, but I don't quite know what to do. There's not like a list of ways to serve in this space. And I know there's organizations that are kind of out of the church and maybe even not supportive of the church, and I don't really want to connect there. Mm-hmm. So how do you answer all those messages? And especially if some of our listeners are saying, I want to do something, but I don't know what to do.
I think, you know, the name of your organization, Listen. Listen is the first, right? Is the Listen the mm-hmm. first word? Yeah. So thanks to Harvey Milk, who told everybody to come out, I think we all have gay and trans people in our family, in our workspace, in our community. So the first thing I would suggest is to listen, is to ask somebody you know who's gay, can I ask you some questions?
That's
you know?
A great idea.
And start to understand what that experience is like. And there are lots of places online to hear stories too. Kendall Wilcox, who's my colleague at Mormons Building Bridges, has the Far Between Project, which has hundreds of interviews online that you can watch of gay, Mormon, trans, bi, lesbian.
How would someone get to Kindle's
report? Just Google Far Between.
Far Between.
What it means to be gay and Mormon.
Okay.
And you'll find it. And then think about, I think we have an opportunity with the way our lessons are now being structured, teaching in the Savior's way, to screw up our courage and ask these questions and stand up for folks in our discussions at church. So we were discussing the proclamation on the family, and this wasn't last week, it was a while back, and which is, you know, incredibly difficult for many of our LGBTQ members, incredibly difficult for me in many ways, although a lot, that 90% of it, you know, is wonderful, but it just, I know how difficult it is. Anyway, so I just decided to, in Relief Society, say, well, you know, my transgender friends have a really strong testimony of the eternal nature of gender. I didn't go into the difficulty of finding yourself assigned to the wrong gender, but I just thought I'd say that. I just thought I'd say that. And to get people used to thinking about using that our experience with gay and trans people is not taboo to talk about. And that this is just as good as any other way to learn how to be a Christian. So I try to speak up. It's always an interesting calculation. Like, if I sound like a broken record in every Relief Society meeting, will people stop listening to me? I don't know. Or is this my calling? Do I need to talk about this? So
that's very honest.
Listening to the Spirit about whether or not right now is the right time. That's what works for me. And then mentioning it, I was in testimony meeting last week. You know, we were all sort of talking about conference, and I knew how difficult President Oakes's talk had been, but I chose to pick a talk. This was the talk, and I think it's President. He's now the president of the Quorum of 70. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Anyway, I know he's the president of Quorum of 70. And he gave a talk about coming to his sister's
bedside. Yeah,
Elder Gay. That's right. Elder Gay. Coming to his sister's bedside as she was about to pass away, giving her a blessing and actually feeling a rebuke from the Lord. And he used that word rebuke, that he had judged her harshly, and that he had not seen her through the eyes of the Savior. And so that talk had really spoken to me, like, that's how we need to approach everybody in the church, especially our LGBTQ brothers and sisters, is see through the eyes of the Savior. And so I talked about that talk, and I said there are a lot of people in the church who are hurting right now, including our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. And I offered to, and I said, if I can help anybody here anyway, text me, my number's in the ward directory. It was connecting LGBTQ support to the larger principle of looking at people in the way the Savior looks at people. So that's one thing I try to do. Another,
I love
take,
that.
And take a look at the Mormons Building Bridges Facebook page too, and the conversations we have. They are not all easy, and we have guidelines about no church bashing and no LGBTQ bashing, but that is often hard to distinguish. So we have really good conversations, but it's a public Facebook page, And so you can, and that is very deliberate for us. You can look at that, and it won't come up in anybody else's feed that you're looking at it. If you want to join the group so you can comment, then you can do that. But it's there to look at. And there's also a lot of resources on our website.
I'd encourage all of our listeners to go to Mormons Building Bridges. It's certainly, I'm remembering the day I found the Mormons Building Bridges Facebook group. And I just paused a little bit and I thought, this is maybe the first thing I was going to do to engage in the space, the first probably group I ever joined. And I just paused a little bit and I thought, am I crossing a line in my faith?
Right.
And I read your bylaws and you could directly see, you could see, and I thought, no, this will be helpful for me to understand the space. And I come back to your first point about listening. That certainly was my own journey as I was a singles ward bishop for the first time listening to, it was the first time I didn't listen to straight people tell me how to feel about LGBTQ. It was the first time, and I think our similar situations are similar because we don't have any LGBT people close to us in our family.
Right, yeah, all my kids are straight.
So, you know, I've never, like parents have often learned this journey firsthand in their own families, but just listening to people that were gay was deeply transforming for me. And I think that's something we can all do. I come back, so I still am on your first advice for people that want to engage. And one of the things I've learned as I've gotten older is people do want to talk. So I would assume maybe 5-10 years ago that someone that's gay doesn't want to talk about that. And I've learned that most people, if they trust you, would like to talk about their life and their journey, and those and listening then is the best thing that I can do. Just listen to understand, like you're teaching, versus listening to project my feelings and honoring how they feel, even if it's different than I feel, and their own lived experience. And so I think that's something we can all do, and like you say, it's the doctrine of Christ. I love your courage in church to sometimes talk about this. That, you know, one of the things that's in some of these Facebook groups we're both in is people's experience, like yours, bringing this up in church, and it's kind of a mixed bag.
Oh, yeah.
Some people then have people reach out to them. Lots of times, it seems like if someone says something in church, they may not get immediate feedback publicly in that meeting, but they may privately, someone may say, I know I can talk to you about stuff now because, and it may not even be LGBTQ stuff. They may just know you're safe to talk about complicated stuff.
Yeah.
And so I assume that happens to you all the time as people are reaching out to you and you're just safe to sort of talk to.
Well, that's the message I want to send. And so it's, you know, and I don't, I also, I don't pretend to be the great perfect listener either. I mean, I'm going to get stuff wrong, I'm sure, but I'm just, I really love the connection that can come in a Mormon ward. I think that's a beautiful, I mean, that is what Building Zion is all about. And so I just really want to make those connections if at all possible.
I got up and bore my testimony, last testimony meeting, and guess whose talk I talked about? Elder Gay's talk.
Really? Awesome.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That we're both impacted by his talk because, like you, I've met so many people outside of the doctrine of our church. I sometimes call it the circle of our doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of realized that 99% of the world's population is outside of our church. But I've certainly have met some of the best people of my life. And at times I've been honored to give priesthood blessings to LGBTQ people, both in our church and both that have left. And I have felt I felt God's love for them in incredible ways that have been deeply transforming and honoring to me to sort of get a glimpse for God's feeling for his LGBTQ children. So, and just his love. And I loved Elder Gay's talking about that situation. And I encourage all of our listeners to listen to the whole talk, but if all you can listen to is the first 5 minutes,
that's beautiful.
5 minutes is beautiful. And I have found, like Elder Gay taught, that I've certainly become closer to Christ because LGBTQ people are teaching me things about the gospel of Jesus Christ that my straight friends haven't been able to teach me. And I feel I've got a long way to go, Erica, but I recognize that I'm being saved partly because of my interaction with LGBTQ people and learning their Christ-like gifts and their attributes. And I think our members are yearning for that connection because they see that connection. Talk about, some people may go, well, I've got this temple, part of my temple recommend questions is do not affiliate with any group of people whose teachings or practice are contrary to the church. And mm-hmm. how do you navigate that? And I'm sure people reach out to you and say, well, God, I'm worried I'm going to lose my temple recommend if I march in a...
Right. Well, there's a you can find online a statement by Elder Christofferson saying very clearly that marching in a pride parade is not any kind of reason for any sort of church discipline. So, which is not to say that some people haven't been questioned by their bishop about this. And I think you need to... know why you're marching, if you want to march. And it's when you look at our website, we are in alignment with the doctrine of the church. We don't consider it our job. It's not our job to try to change doctrine. It's our job to wrestle with what exists. And so... I have never had any problem, and my bishop and stake president are very, very aware of what I'm doing. And so our organization isn't opposing the church in any way. Our organization is deeply embracing the church in ways that may feel uncomfortable for some people, mm-hmm. but this is a way of living your religion. So you can see more information about that on the website. And you can talk about it on the Facebook page too, because it's something like for the most part, most people have not had any problem, but some people have had to have discussions with their bishops or stake presidents who are concerned. Mm-hmm. about it. But I think, and that's what happens in a church where we have a lay ministry and mm-hmm. they're learning. And so I think it's actually a great opportunity to talk to them about why you're doing it and how it connects with your testimony.
Will you be a voice for trans people for a little bit on this podcast? I know it's better obviously to have trans people here, and we have, but that for... faithful Mormons is sometimes the most difficult space. They can sort of understand gay and lesbian, and I think the science is helping us understand more about how people are created, gay and lesbian, but transgender seems to be harder. And so how would you help our faithful members open the door that this is an authentic feeling that our transgender friends are experiencing?
That's a really challenging question because I'm very hesitant to
speak for trans people.
Trans people, exactly. But let me speak to one thing, which is our fear, exactly what I just articulated, our fear of saying something wrong. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is, there are far fewer trans people than there are gay and lesbian people. So anybody's had less experience with a trans person. And I think being open and honest about maybe not knowing what to say, or am I using the right pronouns, mm-hmm. or whatever, is really important. I was at a wonderful gathering that PFLAG Utah County had, and they had a panel of transgender people who were sharing their experience. And my question was, help me understand the best way to navigate, like, when I make a mistake, if I say something that might have been wrong or whatever. And one of the members of the panel just said, Just say sorry, tell me what I should have said, and then move on. Don't put it on the trans person to make you feel better about having made this mistake.
That's very helpful.
Which is, you know, we certainly all have this sort of tendency, like, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, I want to do the right thing. Oh, no. It's not their job to make us feel better about that, okay? But we can just ask for correction. Tell me what I should have said. Got it. Boom. Move on. So all I can say about that is that I understand the fear of the different and the fear of the new. And but that's a great opportunity for a Christian. It's just a fabulous opportunity to try and invite the Spirit in and look at someone through Jesus's eyes and also look at them just, this is your neighbor. This is somebody in your ward. This is somebody who has a family. This is somebody who has a job, you know? And I can understand it'd be tricky, and I encourage you to get as many trans people on this podcast as you can, which I know you're trying to do. So anyway.
That's very helpful. I love that idea that just all the ideas you shared on that. I've certainly, you know, felt impressed to learn transgender people's story from transgender people. I think the first time I listened was an affirmation transgender person who just shared his story on a video, and it was very helpful for me. And certainly, I share this with our listeners that I think, you know, sometimes an online experience of just listening to a transgender person, because I probably was worried about saying the wrong thing,
right,
too.
Right.
And it's such a new space that I didn't, but as I heard, then I felt more comfortable meeting with transgender people as some came into my life. And like you, I didn't always say the right thing, but I could always listen. And I could always not form opinions about things that I didn't know very much about. I certainly, it takes a lot of humility as we get older in life to not have opinions about we all have opinions about everything, but to say, I don't know, takes a great deal of humility. And I'm trying to do that more as I'm learning about different groups of people that I don't know very much about. Any other thoughts on that topic or bringing, helping understand LGBTQ people?
One thing I think I'd like to mention is that by in the work that we do, I'm learning that being a good ally is acknowledging the inherent difficulty involved here. And I would never want to be perceived as glossing over what I said in the beginning about the inherent conflict that exists in our religion, which right now we see no place in the eternities for same-sex relationships. And as an ally, I always want to remember that it's not about me. And it's not about me asking LGBTQ people to make me feel good about being an ally. It is about me listening and reaching out and embracing the conflict in a loving way and taking their lead. And that's a really important thing that I have to keep reminding myself.
I love that. And I love the song Bridge Over Troubled Water from our era.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't sing it for our listeners, but I love what you said. And the visual imagery of that third verse is really helpful for me for what I'm trying to do as an ally. And it's sort of like, sell on silver, baby. Your time has come to fly. Mm. I'm right behind you. I love the visual imagery as an ally. I'm right behind you. I'm here if you need me. I'm here if you're flying and finally shining and your life, beautiful life unfolding, I'm kind of just here in the wings celebrating you, and I'm ready to help you if bad stuff happens. And so that song has been helpful for me, what I'm trying to do as an ally. But it took me making mistakes as an ally to help people understand, no, this isn't about you. And I realized my life's really fine. I don't, you know, I obviously have a lot of privilege, and to use that to help others seems to be what the gospel of Jesus Christ is teaching both of us.
Yeah, I was, I can take a break, you know, I can take a break from this. I was after conference weekend, which has, you know, high points and difficult points. Sometimes I was relieved to go back to work, and I was just grading papers, and I thought, oh, this is great. I can get away from all these complexities of LGBTQ and LDS theology. And then I thought to myself, and I said to a friend, yeah, I can get away with this, but I was talking to my gay friend. I understand that it's always with you, and I just want to kind of acknowledge that.
That is very helpful.
Yeah.
Talk about Sit With Me in a Congregation, part of your Mormons
yeah.
Building Bridges ministry.
So we're actually calling it now Sunday by My Side.
Sunday by My Side.
Or Sunday by Your Side.
That's better.
Sunday by Your Side, right. And it's consisted of mostly visits to Tabernacle Choir events. Where allies we'll get a certain number of tickets, and anybody who wants to come can come. And we found that actually the space of Tabernacle Choir events are really great ways to enjoy a church event for folks who aren't comfortable being at church right now. But they can feel supported, and we can sort of share in the lovely spirit of the choir. So we've gone to like the Christmas shows and to the 24th of July things, and also to conferences. So to general conferences, we're able to have groups in that. And we'd love to expand that to have, you know, specific, we've also had, and I think we've had a couple of these in the past, but specific Sundays just among the wards, like invite somebody to come with you, put yourself out there and say, I'm in this ward at this time. If you'd like to come and sit next to me, you can. Because knowing that there's an ally there, you know, I think that's an important thing. Allies are everywhere. That's another one of our signs. Allies that we put up at pride parades and hugging booths. Allies are everywhere, and I think there are more of us than we might imagine.
Do you wear anything at church? Some allies will wear something at church.
Yeah, I have a homemade, I went to Deseret Book, got a Moroni tie tack, and then have a little rainbow ribbon that I attach to that. So I wear that at church.
Do you get any negative feedback for wearing that?
No, you know, what I found is that sometimes this marvelous Mormon politeness can totally work in your favor. And so anybody who feels negative about it hasn't told me anything about it. And people who like it have said, oh, that's great. So that's a helpful thing.
This is kind of a long road. Talk about the long road it is for allies if they want to step into space, and especially for LGBTQ people.
Yeah, it was interesting. So with the success of the first Pride Parade
in 2013.
Yeah, in 2012.
2012. So that's 6 years
right.
ago.
Right. You know, we got a lot of press, and I think there was a temptation to try to go big and create some giant organization, and we realized that first of all, it's just not practical. We're all folks with day jobs. And second, it's you want something that is sustainable. And so we are, advocating the wisdom of baby steps, not only because hearts and institutions take a long time to change perspectives, but also each of us individually need to do what we can, but we need to do it in a way that keeps us healthy and whole. And I understand how it can feel very urgent, the mental health and suicide situation cannot be underestimated. But on the other hand, we all have to, I want to keep up this work for the rest of my life. And I've also seen how I've seen the church become, even in these 6 years, I've seen the church become a more welcoming place. So I think Mormons Building Bridges in our various initiatives are all doable, small things. And I would just, encourage people to be really wise about how they spend their time. And really, I just feel bad when wonderful, valiant, well-meaning people burn out. Mm-hmm. That's hard. That's a really hard thing. So, and once again, that may sound like the privilege of an ally speaking, like, oh, I can afford to go slow. But I think
it's very sensitive.
Self-care. We all, LGBTQ people know about self-care better than anybody. So we just all have to be really attuned to that.
Talk about, that's a very helpful answer. Talk about how you feel when an LGBTQ person leaves. You kind of hinted at that before, mm-hmm. that you obviously see many LGBTQ people leave our church. It's mm-hmm. a church that we both love, support, we believe in. How do you handle that and just not worry, or do you worry about their mm-hmm. future and their eternal salvation? Or can you be happy as they leave in some level that they're choosing a path that they feel is right for them? And even though it's, how do you just manage
that? Right.
Because I think a lot of active Mormons don't quite know how to cognitively or spiritually manage that.
It is. It's challenging. But I just feel like it's so not my place to judge anybody else's decision at all. And it's a very grown up choice to say, I'm going to stay in this church and continue to do what I can. And at the same time, I'm going to support you in making whatever decision you need to make. So I just feel very strongly that, and I just think that that's really, the more people can show that willingness to embrace both of those things, they can really teach people a lesson. For folks who, for many other reasons, might not be in the church, for kids who decide not to be active in their adult life, what makes me sad is if you decide that for those who have left, you're going to love them, but in a kind of distant love, in a kind of distant, unengaged love, in a kind of distant, almost judging kind of love. I love you as I should love all human beings, but you're just not doing what you ought to be doing. That doesn't sound like unconditional love to me. So I really want people to be happy. And I don't mean happy in a superficial way. I want people to have meaning in this life and to be emotionally okay. And so it's just not my job. It is so totally my job to continue to be a friend, a deeply engaged friend, and to share my experience with them and to learn from their experience. And that's how I feel about him.
As you as you teach that and share that with our listeners, the scripture, perfect love casteth out fear, comes to my mind. Because I assume your fear, if it existed with mm-hmm. LGBTQ mm-hmm. people, even those that are outside of the doctrine of our church, that fear has been replaced with love, and you don't have any fear.
Well, I get scared about things all the time. I mean, but fear is the opposite of love. I don't think it's hate. I think fear is the opposite of love. And so just pushing through the fear is something that I try to do, I think.
Some of our dear active LDS members have a faith crisis over this issue. They see it's just difficult for them to reconcile their belief in the church and see how the church at times is not healthy or healing for LGBTQ people, and then even LGBTQ people that live, and they seem to do okay in an emotional and a societal sense, and they have wonderful lives and contribute to society. And so what would you say if there are people, this is sort of you talking to people in the church that want to stay in the church that are dealing with a faith crisis or just the complicated nature of that and really want to stay?
Right. I was very blessed to grow up in a household where the complexities of the church and the imperfections of everybody in the church was something that we were comfortable with. And I also think it's okay to say, I don't know. I don't have an answer for this problem yet.
As a leader, as a member?
I would love to hear it from our leaders more often. And I have heard it from time to time. There is so much we don't know. There is so much we don't know. But how can any institution that is run by human beings not be imperfect? That's kind of what I say to the person who's having faith. But it's also not my job to keep that person in the church either. But that's how it works for me, is the church is built out of humans, and it's come, and the culture and history of humanity is a part of us. We can't separate it perfectly all the time. And there's just, the church isn't perfect. And I just wish, you know, I turn back to President Uchtdorf's wonderful talk of 4 or 5 years ago about problems with the church and people who made mistakes and that sort of thing. And I understand if you were raised in a home where unquestioning obedience was the rule, and that's really meaningful to a lot of people. But when you then see the difficulty that LGBTQ people have, if they, when they're trying to adhere to that, I understand how dissonant that is. I really do. And I would just say that you're not alone if you're feeling, if that is bringing on a faith crisis for you. And it's actually an incredibly great opportunity for growth.
I love that. I feel grateful. I felt impressed to ask you that question. It just came into my mind. And I love how you ended with growth. Sometimes I feel like it's falling upward, where I have a different relationship with the church as I become aware of things we've said in the past that are clearly things that we don't teach now. And I think at times we're just an imperfect organization. I think the gospel of Jesus Christ is perfect. And I think our beautiful restored church has the priesthood and the priesthood keys, but we don't necessarily are a perfect organization to implement the gospel of Jesus Christ. And at times there's gaps. And I love the home you grew up in that kind of talked about those gaps in a faithful way and gave you, a foundation to be able to navigate this versus another foundation where then someone comes across something that's difficult and there's no framework to process that except leaving. For me, and I think my listeners have heard my own personal analogies, I have some fallen dominoes. But dominoes sort of infer that if one starts falling, it hits all the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And for me, I have dominoes with roots that are very, very deep. And so when I come across something that might be a fallen domino, it hits some roots that are very helpful for me, like my belief that in the priesthood, my belief in this beautiful plan of salvation, a pre-earth life, and the understanding with that and the post-life. And there's so many beautiful doctrines about Christ and who he really is and his love and the atonement that keep me anchored. But I have some dominoes that have fallen, have never gotten back up. It's mm-hmm. not like, and it's not like I'm trying to make my whole orientation with the church put up my dominoes. And I don't really talk about my fallen dominoes too much. I don't try to evangelize people to feel the way I do. I just feel the way I do.
Yeah.
But I've moved forward, and to your point, it's growth. Yeah, I actually feel my testimony and my relationship with the church is in a more sustainable state right now for the long term as I deal with complicated issues. And I think it might be the type of testimony our millennials need. Is they're always going to be aware of some of the complicated things in our church or our church past. Any thoughts on that, Erica?
Well, you used the word gap, and there's a philosopher... writer named Parker Palmer, who has influenced a lot of the things that we do. And he's actually from the Quaker tradition, but he talks about this idea of the tragic gap, which is the distance between what you want, your goal, and what is currently. And so living in that tragic gap, and the term tragic may put people off as something that you'd never want to get near, but sort of acknowledging that there is gaps are going to exist, and what are we going to do with them? Let's not pretend that they're not there.
Yeah.
Let's not say that I refuse to be a part of an organization that has any gaps, because it was interesting. I remember talking to a clergy person, a pastor at a Unitarian Universalist church in Utah. And she said, you know, it's funny, we get Mormon folks here coming to our congregation because the church isn't working for them anymore. And so they're worshiping with us and we love it. And they're now part of our community. She said, but then they come to me with various problems about our congregation. And they're like, I thought you guys would be perfect. And and she says, you know, no church is perfect.
Interesting.
Which is not to say that there might be a better place for people in one way or another, but institutions are tricky, you know. We could all be off in the desert reading our scriptures by ourselves, but we're working with community, and Building Zion is engaging with each other.
I like that. Institutions can be tricky. I think they can bring us great joy, but I think they can generate pain at times into our own lives. And
right.
I think I always had a testimony that the church was a means to God and Christ, but that's become clearer to me is that ultimately the most important thing in our church teaches this is my relationship with my heavenly parents and my Savior and our religion and the doctrine and the covenants we keep is a means to that. And I wondered if I made it too much that the end was my relationship with the institutional church.
Right.
And I created value and self-worth in me about how the institutional church valued me or heard me or what perhaps my leadership callings were, the way I was serving within the institutional church. And all that's really important. But the ultimate goal is what I'm doing to help others come into Christ, have a relationship with our heavenly parents, and what I'm doing.
Absolutely, so, I agree with that.
And I
wholeheartedly.
And certainly, the space that we're both in has certainly helped me to have to come closer. I think personally, this isn't about me, the ally, though. But certainly, The things I'm learning from LGBTQ people are helping me understand Christ's mission better and want to fully be more Christ-like. Any closing thoughts, Erica, you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I'm grateful to anyone who's willing to download a podcast and listen. This is wonderful. As you said, that really resonated with me when you talked about this, in like invigorating your church life. My bridge building work has been incredibly satisfying and makes church more meaningful for me. I'm extremely grateful for it, and I love the things I've learned from my LGBTQ brothers and sisters. It's just made me a better Christian and a better Mormon, a better member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Thank you, Erica, for joining us. Erica and I said a prayer before we started. We hope that you felt a spirit here that's helpful for you. We pray that wherever you are, that you'll continue to feel God in your life and continue to feel inspiration and promptings how best to live your life and how best to serve others. So thank you, Erica Munson, for joining us on another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.
You're very welcome. Thank you.